Welcome to 216, the Link to the Past Randomizer podcast. I am your host, Fear Agent. Today on the show, we've got Lumaga. I say this every time, and every time it's true. Great episode with Lumaga. Had a real blast talking with him. And it's cool because I thought we were going to have like the same perspective on a lot of stuff because of our age similarities and kind of where we come to the game at. But Lumaga and I see things a lot differently. And I love that. I love hearing other people's perspectives and kind of opening my mind to different ideas when it comes to racing, when it comes to the community, when it comes to volunteering. I love it. I love gaining new perspective. And so it was great sitting down with Lumaga. I'm really happy with this episode, and I think you'll enjoy it as well. I think that's all that's going on in the rando world, right? So we had the bonus episode on Thursday after the council blew up and has officially been dissolved. There is no more racing council. I think I've spoken here multiple times that I think the need for a council has kind of run its course. I think I was wrong. I think the current council as it was had served its purpose. There was a real clash between the admins and the council, and it just wasn't working. And so the racing community taking control of the racing rules is exactly what needs to happen. Now, what does that look like? I have no idea. The old council members from the last class, except for Crawlbo, have opened up the TARC, the ALTTPR racing community. What is TARC, you ask? I have no idea. The former council members have now tasked themselves with trying to figure out what it is. How are we going to govern our rule set going forward in competitive racing? Right now, everyone's kind of in a fervor because it feels like there's a world of opportunities. I would say don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. The rando rule set works as it is. I understand people want to get rid of some glitches. People don't like hovering. People don't like that the specky clip wasn't passed. I think there's room to like relitigate some of that stuff. But trying to start from scratch is just going to cause more of a problem for the community than if you take what the rules are now and sort of adjust them here or there. So who's going to do that? I don't know. Is there going to be an election for a new council? Is there going to be something else? How many people? I think one of the biggest problems with the council is the amount of people. I think it's like 17 on the current council or the now former current council. I think that's too many. I think Codeman said something like 7 to 9. I think that actually would be a good number. I think you don't want to go more than 10. I think you have those people focus on making a competitive rule set that isn't too much different than what it is now, but maybe open to adjust some things here or there. I think you have a whole other group of people that are just tasked with watching out for cheaters. That would be my suggestion, is do not combine them. Maybe there's some overlap with some of the people that can do both. Honestly, I'd keep them separate. Just have people that can investigate and root out those cheaters. People like Matt7898 are good people. GGW is a good person to do something like that. Act the Boker. People that are good at finding cheaters and investigating them and getting to conclusive or as conclusive evidence as they can. Let them deal with that and let the council or whatever we're going to call it deal with glitches and the rando rule set. Just my suggestion. Really, it comes down to what does Dunka think? Because Dunka runs the ladder. And I know he's working with the council members in TARC to get this thing up and running. But most competitive racing happens on the ladder. So you got to go with what Dunka thinks. I mean, if he doesn't like what TARC puts out, he can just dismiss it. And if he dismisses it, it's kind of dead in the water. Dunka's very reasonable, though. So I know that he'll do what is right for the community. I mean, he's proven that time and time again with the ladder. It'd be interesting to see where the league and some of the tournament admins, Cross Keys, main tournament, line up with all of this as well. I know that they can do their own rule set, but it's so nice to have a centralized rule set that everyone can turn to. And then if you want to adjust it, kind of what Kaz Boots is doing with adding Specky Clip, you can do that. But having a uniform, like this is the race rules, it's just a headache saver, really. Keeping everything centralized is the best for everyone. And then allow other people to adjust it as needed. I mean, it's not broken. What was broken was the way everything was handled. Unfortunately, Crawlbo has shown that his intentions were never for the betterment of the community. He held a grudge and allowed that to fester and has sort of united rando through his willingness to burn it all down. I'm in a lot of different discords. I'm friends with a lot of different people from a lot of different communities. And a lot of those communities clash. They butt heads. They don't really like each other. That's just the nature of it. And I'm kind of in the middle where I get to see it all. And watching them all unite through this situation has been something that I never thought I'd see. So through the bad times, good can come. So where does it go from here? I don't know. We're going to have to cover it as it happens. We're just days away from all of it sort of imploding and then now trying to pick up the pieces and where do we go from here? Fortunately, there are smarter people than me that can figure this all out. If I'm looking for people to put in charge, I want people that are level-headed, that are playing the game, that are knowledgeable. I want people like Airy. I want people like Structural Mike. I want people like Zelga Desan. I want people that have shown that they can, one, get along with everyone, two, have a lot of knowledge, and three, are reasonable people that will not try to upset the apple cart, that have the best interests of the community. People like Todd So. Those are the type of people that I'd want to see put in charge of this. So what happens? Who knows? We'll see. We'll follow it all along. And I don't really pride myself on being like the news portion of Link to the Past Randomizer. Like that, I don't feel like that's my role. I'm more of a people person. I wanted to get to know the people. But this is bigger. This isn't just another tournament. This isn't just a new glitch that's been found. This is going to affect Rando going forward. And it's pretty interesting. I think Rando will be fine. It's definitely just a shakeup. It's definitely good that it's separate from the admins of the main Discord. Because frankly, those admins aren't really involved in the racing community. And for them to have as much say as they did, it just didn't work out. And then more than anything, they proved that they weren't going to be reliable. Looking out for friends or whatever the reason that they chose to defend Krellbell, you know, it just didn't work. So this was probably going to happen sooner or later. But here we are. So we'll see. All right, let's get to the show with Lumaga. Again, super excited about this. No more wasting your time. Let's get to Lumaga. All right, Lumaga, thank you so much for doing the show, man. Very excited to have you on. First, let me say thank you for filling in on one of the episodes for me and doing the intros and everything. That was super helpful. And, both been a part of the community for quite a while now, I feel like I don't know your story very well. So I'm super excited to hear what you have to say and all about who you are.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show and thank you for letting me do the guest introduction. That was a lot of fun. Kind of gave me a little bit of insight into what it takes to put on a podcast and be happy with what you're saying. I probably recorded that 3 or 4 times before I sent it to you.
Did you? Yeah, yeah. That's so funny. It's funny. Like, you think just talking is easy, but it takes a lot of practice and takes some skill to be, I think I'm okay at it, but.
You want to be happy with what you're putting out to people because
for sure.
if you're not happy, they're not happy.
Yeah. Yeah. But sometimes it's like you can be overly critical, especially when it comes to your voice, because you know, when you first start recording yourself and you're listening back, you're not used to it. And
very critical of yourself.
Yeah. And everything you say, you pick it apart. It's just like, just kind of have fun. So it's 216 has been a lot of fun. I thought you did great on that intro, by the way.
Thank you.
You have like a real professional sound and quality to your voice as well. So it feels like you could even be hosting your own show if you wanted.
I do a lot of talking and communication for work with my clients. So I've kind of developed a way to have a good cadence and think about what I'm going to say. So I don't know. It doesn't come naturally to me. I've just been trained at it, I guess.
Sure. I have not, because I work at home by myself. I don't really talk to people. Most of my communication is through like email and stuff. Yeah. So I don't really ever talk to anyone. I think the podcast is my way to interact with people or when I would stream. So with you, I'm excited because I feel like our stories are very similar just from like the few brief interactions that we've had and, you know, some of the things that we've talked about. It feels like, we're close to the same age, right?
I just turned 40 this year.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm a couple years older than you, but you got kids, right?
I have 3 kids,
just like
a teen, a preteen, and, you know, a young one. So. I've got three different phases of fatherhood going on.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And we both like old video games. It just feels like there's a lot there, and I'm excited to hear your story. So why don't we just start like with what we do with a lot of people, and let's start with your history of playing video games.
Sure. So growing up, in the Detroit area, I didn't really have a whole lot. Like our family was not doing so hot in the early 80s and mid 80s. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really start getting into video games until my uncle, who is he's relatively close in age to me. He's only 10 years older than me, got a Nintendo. And this is like late 80s. So I got to play video games when I went over to grandma's house.
Mm. Right.
He had some like some classic games, Final Fantasy, Zelda 1, Zelda 2, Kid Icarus. And then he had some like obscure games, which, you know, people don't think about when they think of Nintendo. Legacy of the Wizard and Goonies 2.
Right? Oh,
Those are. And there's probably like six more games that he had.
Sure.
That was kind of my introduction, you know, through the 80s and like early 90s.
That's awesome. So were you playing as much as you could when you went over to grandma's house? Was it like, I'm just going to play video games as much as I can? Or were you still limited?
No, actually, I got to spend the night over there like quite a bit with my brother. And I didn't know kids in that neighborhood, and not excellent neighborhood to go play outside in anyway. So we stayed inside and played sure. video games. And that's kind of how I really started getting into like Legend of Zelda in the first place. And also he had a couple of books. He had Nintendo Power, and he had like this strategy book of the Nintendo. It was probably like 100 games in there, and it had maps and cheats and tactics. And I would just browse through that every day and like say, okay, if I were going to play this game, here's how I would like, you know, I'd trace through it with my finger on the map and say, yeah, here's where I got to go first, and here's where I got to go second. But I didn't even own the game, and neither did he. So it's like, you know, just imagining playing it.
That's so good, man. Strategy guides is something I haven't thought about in a long time, mainly because of the internet, right? Like any sort of like magazine, you know, Nintendo Power obviously was big when we were growing up. But all those things that kind of would help you, because a lot of those games are super hard. Like if you think of The Legend of Zelda, it does not hold your hand at all.
Right. Yeah. And that was probably the game I spent the most time on was the original Legend of Zelda. I remember not having a whole lot of success on it, maybe midway through the game. I would pick up things from my uncle watching him play, but you know, I was never good at actually playing the game. I could explore, sure, I could pick up some items, but I'd have to have like my dad help me in like the rooms with all the dark nuts. Like I would die every time, so he would, you know, help me out and then hand the controller back to me.
Yeah, for sure. So you said you grew up in Detroit. Were you in the 313 with Eminem?
No. Okay. So there's like three parts to like the Detroit area. There's Detroit proper, which, you know, is, everyone knows, not a great like situation to live in most parts of it. Then there's like the northern part, which is pretty affluent. And then there's the southern part, which is kind of blue collar. You know, that's where I grew up at.
Okay. That's like where the car manufacturer type stuff was.
Yeah, there's quite a few factories like in this area.
Okay. Did you like growing up in Detroit?
It's home.
Are you still there?
Oh yeah, yeah. So it is home. It's where I've decided to stay. That's where my wife is from also. So we decided, we have our jobs here. We can stick with family. So this is where we've been living just about all of our lives.
Okay. It's so funny. And when you think of certain areas of the country, right, or certain cities, they get a reputation usually through some sort of like pop culture, right? Like if I was to mention Seattle, the first thing everyone mentions would be like the Space Needle, right? Like,
right.
Although Seattle is a Space Needle when it's just, you know, a very specific part of downtown. And when you think of Detroit, I for me, at least, it's very music driven, because you've got like Eminem and you've got Kid Rock, you got the White Stripes.
Yeah, it's got a great music scene. And I think what was it, EDM had its start here as well.
Did it?
Yeah, the electronic dance music. So there's like a big music scene here.
Okay. Again, this is kind of off topic, but, you know, with Seattle, if you say Seattle music, everyone immediately goes to Nirvana, right? Like it's Nirvana. When football broadcasts are playing, they always have to like go to commercial with Nirvana or maybe Pearl Jam or something like that. Do you get annoyed by having like Eminem, Kid Rock, White Stripes, and any of those other bands? I mean, you got Motown, obviously, as well.
Great music scene.
Yeah. I mean, but like, it feels like Detroit has such a huge variety. I wouldn't even know. Like, my mind goes to Eminem because that's what I grew up with. But again, like Motown and everything.
Yeah.
I don't
know. I'm glad we have a local culture that people can look to and say like, oh, yeah, that's Detroit. You mentioned Motown. Right. You put on the Four Tops or the Supremes and people think, OK, Detroit. Same with Eminem. And, you know, I listened to Eminem when I was in high school and college and all that. So for other people to hear like, you know, Eminem and think 8 Mile and think Detroit. Right. And it's like, yeah. Yeah. Although I've had people tell me like, yeah, I want to go see 8 Mile. And I'm like, there's absolutely nothing to see there.
it's just a stretch.
It's a road.
Right?
It's a road. Yeah.
That's so funny. But yeah, I mean, the music from the movie obviously was very influential in the late 90s, early 2000s and stuff. So I don't know. It's just me. I love Nirvana and I really love Pearl Jam. But part of me gets tired of like, you know, there's more to us than that. Right. I guess right. Detroit's a little bit different.
Oh, yeah. Every city is like that. There's so much. There's so many layers to every city. And I've done a lot of traveling for work. So I've been able to kind of take off like here's the top layer of what I think of Nashville or what I think of, I don't know, Albany, New York or something like that. And get into it.
Yeah, for sure. New York is another big one, right? Because it's so big and different areas, different boroughs and all, you know. A lot of times, a lot of people think of New York, you think of like Times Square, but that's literally just one tiny little portion of
exactly.
New York. All right, back to you. You're playing the NES. You don't have it at your house, but you're playing a lot of Zelda. Does that eventually translate into like the Super Nintendo or anything else?
Yeah. So with my uncle, he did get a Super Nintendo, and this was probably like 91, 92. You know, he saved up money from his part-time job. But our family ended up getting like an NES a little bit later in its life cycle. And I got a Game Boy too, for Christmas one year that me and my brother shared it. So, you know, things got a little bit better for us, as time went on, right? It's not static. Mm-hmm. Playing the SNES though, still over at grandma's house and, all that. I think there were only two launch games or maybe like three or four launch games for the SNES. And he had two of them. I think he had F-Zero and Super Mario World. Yeah. So I played the hell out of Super Mario World, like, I don't know, for 6 months until he got a couple more games.
What were the other ones? Was Pilot Wings one of the launch games?
Well, I know Pilot Wings and Mario 64 were the 64 games. I gotta say, I think Pilot Wings was really early in Super Nintendo's releases also.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder then how early, I haven't really looked into this, was Link to the Past. And were you playing Link to the Past at all?
Yeah. First time I played Link to the Past actually was like a demonstration in like a shopping mall, right? Oh, there was like JCPenney or something. And they had a line of like, you know, 20 kids. And I'm like, you know, hey, mom, dad, can I play it? So I waited in line and I got my 5 minutes of play time and I'm like, this is so cool. And I have no idea where I'm going. And, he ended up getting it for, my uncle got it for Super Nintendo. And, you know, that was again, what I played almost all the time. You know, I still live in the area when I go through like that neighborhood on a hot summer day. And, you know, I have the windows down. I can still kind of feel like, okay, this is what it felt like 30 years ago on a summer day when I was sitting inside playing, you know, Link to the Past. The nostalgia for that game is that strong.
Oh, that's so awesome. I love that. I love that when the nostalgia sort of hits. I mean, Link to the Past is probably a strong nostalgia bomb for most people in the community, but
naturally,
it's just, such a good game. I can't believe how old it is when you kind of start to think about the quality of the game that long ago, and like the upgrades from going from like Zelda 1, Zelda 2 to Zelda 3. It's like insane what they're able to do with them.
I was talking to my brother about this just recently, that, you know, these guys, for them, it was just a way for them to make money, right? I mean, it's a job, you know, you're either a programmer or an artist or something, but the passion that they put into it and the way it impacted, you know, our generation. I mean, you see it in like, hey, people still make like games that pull from that art style that play style. Mm-hmm. Or you look at like ocremix.org, they have like thousands of remixes of old games. It made that much of an impact. And for them, it was like, it's a job,
right?
And passion for it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all of Nintendo, right? Like Mario is one of the biggest IPs, like rivaling like Mickey Mouse, even with, you know, the movie that came out earlier this year. It's just like insane that they took an Italian plumber and turned him into a giant IP and awesome games, right? Like, gosh, I don't know how big of a fan of you are of the 3D Marios, but Mario Odyssey and Mario 64, all timers.
Absolutely. Mario 64 is probably one of the more memorable games of like that era for me. Just again, playing it like nonstop, like trying to get that 120th star, you know, beating it for the first time. It's awesome. And it was a great turning point in the technology too.
Yes.
Just seeing it in full 3D.
Yeah. It was such a unique and new idea to be able to do a platformer in three dimensions, right? Like we had stuff like Wolfenstein and Doom and those sort of like 3D, I use in quotes, games, but this was so immersive and so different. And the level design of Mario 64 is just so good.
Right.
So did you transfer? Did you get a 64, or was that again your uncle and you're having to go over there and play?
No. So by this point, you know, family was doing fine. We did get a 64 for Christmas. And, you know, this was the time when it was like it transitioned from Nintendo and Sega to Nintendo and Sony as the big rivalry.
Yep.
And I had by that point, we had a subscription to Nintendo Power, and like I would, you know, with some money I got from mowing the lawn, just pick up like a Game Informer or something like that. And I would see like, here's all these upcoming games for these new systems. And for whatever reason, maybe it was the Mario effect because it's so appealing. We went with the 64 that we asked for, but after a while, honestly, like all these games started coming out for the PlayStation. There was Final Fantasy VII, Metal Gear Solid, Final Fantasy Tactics, you know, dozens of others I'm sure I could name. And I started having a little bit of this regret, like, I think I picked the wrong system. And so it was funny. My brother and I were like, okay, we got to go to, it was Funko Land at the time. We got to go to Funko Land. We got to get a PlayStation and a few games, and we did. And the first games we got were like Final Fantasy Tactics, which was the main driver for me to get PlayStation, and Castlevania Symphony of the Night. So two amazing games that I'm like, yep, this was the better choice for me, I think.
Sure. I feel like with Nintendo, even to this day, they try to go with quality over quantity, right? Like it feels like, you know, we get how many Zelda games per console, how many Mario games per console, maybe a Metroid here and there, a Pokemon. But it feels like with now Xbox and PlayStation, they're just putting everything out there. I guess it's a little bit different with Steam and the accessibility of computers. But
I guess, I mean, well, there was certainly a lot of shovelware on like the Game Boy, or even Super Nintendo had this. 64 was also victim of all the shovelware that came out. There's dozens of games that, you know, were just garbage.
Sure. Superman 64. I mean, there's as much as I love the 64 console, you know, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask, Mario 64, to name a few, a lot of those games just suck. The console wasn't ready to do what it was trying to do. And PlayStation, obviously, especially that first one, sort of like, I remember playing Resident Evil and Resident Evil 2 and just being like, holy shit, I can't believe this is a thing. This is so cool.
And just earlier that decade, we had like, you know, all the like Mario 2, Mario 3. And it's just a huge step forward in terms of play style and technology and graphics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Growing up in the 80s and 90s, I'm like, I would never have imagined, you know, playing something like Resident Evil 2 by the end of the decade.
Totally. Yeah, that was nuts. Going back to the Sega of it all, were you kind of going back and forth between the Sega and Nintendo, or did you even, were you just straight Nintendo because that's what you had?
We actually did get a Genesis. I think my dad, like, you know, got it without permission from my mom and got it for me for my birthday or something. And nice. Like, well, because we didn't have the money for it. And so, you know, not knowing it at the time, I'm like, all right, thanks, Dad. But now knowing, like, hindsight, I'm really appreciative, like, what my dad was able to do for us. But we did have a Sega. And I mean, it was fine. Sonic 1, Sonic 2, Sonic 3, awesome. There's a couple of others that I guess I have some nostalgia for, but yeah, it was fine.
Ready for a hot take? I think the Genesis is overrated. I think the Super Nintendo was way better.
Well, that's not a hot take. That's a fact.
Oh man, I mean, I have other friends that were super into Sega and not into Nintendo, so they would say otherwise, but I just feel like the Super Nintendo was where it's at. But I'm also super biased because I just love Mario and Zelda. So I don't know.
Right.
So you're moving on with your consoles. You get a PlayStation. Does that continue on? Do you stick with the PlayStation, or are you kind of going, now that you got a little bit of cash, do you go both, or where were you heading for?
Right. So yeah, at this time I'm a teenager. I can, you know, kind of make my own decisions as far as I can at 17, 18. And I'm getting games for, you know, PlayStation. I'm getting games for the 64, which we still had. And by the time PlayStation 2 came around, it was GameCube, right? Mm. That was the next one from Nintendo.
Yep.
And my now brother-in-law has had a GameCube. And I'm like, this is so cool. And oh man, he's got Smash Brothers. And, you know, hey, I would love to keep playing this, like, and not have to go over to, you know, my girlfriend's house to play it. I think I'm going to get a GameCube. And I got it basically for Super Smash Brothers. But then of course, PlayStation 2 had all these major hits. And I'm like, even though I got to play like Metroid Prime and, you know, I'm sure there's a couple of other bangers I'm missing.
Wind Waker, maybe.
Yeah, we'll get to my other Zelda games in a second. I still kind of felt like I made the wrong choice, but I did not end up getting like a PlayStation 2 or 3 or 4 or anything. It was GameCube was the next one, and then I actually skipped out on the Wii. I didn't get anything after that.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Zelda, yes, the additional Zelda games.
Totally.
So, of course, there was Zelda 1, which I played the heck out of. Mm-hmm. And then there's Zelda 2, which my uncle had. And I know it's derided in some circles, but I really enjoy the game. Maybe it's just because I didn't have a whole lot of selection to choose from. And mm-hmm. that was one of them that's got a soft spot in my heart. Zelda 3, of course, yep. We talked about that. And then after that, I mentioned I had a Game Boy. I got Link's Awakening, which was awesome. My brother had got Ocarina of Time for his birthday. I actually really didn't care. As much as I loved Mario 64, like the 3D Zelda has not been like one of the things that I would go to. And that includes Wind Waker or Skyward Sword, Twilight Princess. New ones too, right? I've never played Breath of the Wild. I don't have any desire to play Tears of the Kingdom. Like, so I don't know, for as far as being a Zelda fan, I guess I'm just like not that great of a Zelda fan. So,
sure. You're a 2D fan. Why do you think that happened? Like, was it because the PlayStation came out and you were more interested in other fantasy games, or what was it?
That could be it. So part of it could be that I did start taking a liking to RPGs, Final mm-hmm. Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy VI. I mentioned Tactics already. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's just kind of where if I'm going to spend my time, I want to have that kind of game instead of 3D Zelda, which I don't know, maybe it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like the games
we
are
like
fun,
what we like, right? Yeah. Like it doesn't, I mean, there's no,
I feel like I got to justify it a little bit because it's like, hey, why do you like these Zelda games and not those Zelda games?
Yeah. I don't know if justify is the right word. I think trying to understand where you were coming from, because if you are into a different sort of like Final Fantasy scratches an itch, it's similar to Zelda, 3D Zeldas in some way, right? Like, I don't know how, I haven't paid attention to Final Fantasy in since 7, really. They're not all turn-based anymore, right?
Yeah, they're very action-oriented, like 15 and especially 16.
Mm-hmm. So I can definitely see like getting more into another franchise, not just, you know, Final, those aren't the two only fantasy franchises that are out there, but I can see getting into other things. So did you play Ocarina of Time? Because you did have the 64 and had access to it.
Yeah, I did. I never beat it. I got to, I don't know, probably close to the end of it. I think I gave up like during the water temple, which was pain in the ass.
Sure. Yeah. Understandable. Yep.
I'm like, you know, this is not even fun anymore. So I just got rid of it, or I didn't get rid of it. I just put it down rather. It's my brother's.
So did it stop there? Like you didn't pick up Majora's Mask. You didn't play Wind Waker.
I rented Wind Waker over the summer, after high school. And I'm like, this is kind of fun. I could see playing this. And then I never did after that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, no judgment for sure.
I know it's probably, you know, atypical though.
Oh, for sure. Especially as, you know, we play Link to the Past Randomizer, right? Like we're neck deep in Zelda stuff. But again, it's that specific game. It doesn't have to be the entire oeuvre of games, especially because the 3D games are so different. But no interest then, because you said you didn't pick up a Wii. So no, obviously no Skyward Sword. But do you have a Switch?
We have a Switch, and we have some games for it, right? Mostly my kids play it. My wife plays the heck out of Animal Crossing.
Sure.
But but I don't pick it up all that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, these days, I guess if I'm doing anything, if it's outside of Rando, like I got a few, you know, casual games from Steam. Gaming is not as big of a part of my life anymore. I mean, you grow up. I mentioned I'm 40, right? I got a family, I got a career, so I've got different priorities at this point.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so you're playing games, you're kind of moving on from Nintendo after the GameCube. The handle was enough for you. You could carry around the GameCube whenever you wanted, even though I don't know what the point of the handle was. You said you didn't get a PS2?
Never got a PlayStation 2 or onward.
Okay, so was the GameCube?
I did get in 2007 an Xbox 360. So it was between that, or I think it was the PlayStation 3 at the time. It was between those two, and what sold me was Xbox Live Arcade, which I mean, I'm getting a next gen system and I want to play, like, you know,
retro games
on it. Yep. Like I did play plenty of other 360 games, but that was like the tipping point for me.
Mm-hmm. So what about speedrunning or watching racing? Because you and I, again, are of the same generation where if you talk to someone our age or older, they're like, why would you ever watch someone play video games? Right? Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So where did you first start watching? Did you watch YouTube Let's Plays? Did you get introduced to Twitch or did you even have speedrunning on your mind?
I guess it was doing a form of speedrunning back, like just on my own. So with Zelda 1, right, I had dusted off my NES and I said, I know I can beat this. Let me see if I can beat it in a single session. And it took me like 2.5 hours to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, all right, so I can do that. Maybe a week later, I'm like, let me see if I can do it in under 2 hours. And I did. And I'm like, all right, cool, accomplishment. And now you look at the leaderboard and, you know, but the record is like 27 minutes and it's like 2 hours is nothing. But right. Hey, it was cool for me at the time to be able to do that.
Right. And you probably had no idea there was even a leaderboard at the time, right?
I mean, this was like 99 or 2000. So right. I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there wasn't was something somewhere, but yeah.
Yeah, some circles probably did have like competitive speed running on that. Mm-hmm. But as far as like getting into it and watching it, I guess it wasn't until like 2016 I started watching, you know, more people on Twitch about like speed running retro games. And the one who really caught my eye was a runner called Endi Sui. He's a Swedish runner and he does a lot of retro stuff. I used to watch his Chippendale and DuckTales speed runs. And I'm like, that's really cool, all the things he's able to pull off. So not recording it, not streaming it, but I tried it on my own. And I'm like, I don't know, I got a time of like 15 minutes in Chippendale. And, you know, that's barely respectable, but hey, I did it. And I didn't want to stream it because, like, you know, I get anxiety about, you know, putting myself out there, which, you know, I guess I'm used to for work. And I mean, I have to do that because it pays the bills. But, you know, even streaming Zelda, like for races or getting out in commentary, it's like it's a little like, you know, anxiety inducing. So I didn't want to do like speedrunning streaming. And so that was like, just do it locally, upload it later. And I did that for a couple more. I think I did it for Final Fantasy IV. It was like, it's called Paladin Percent, where it's like, if you get to the point in the story where Cecil becomes a paladin, that's the end of the run. And I did that, and I did a Goonies 2 speed run, got on the leaderboard for those.
Nice.
So, I mean, that was like the extent of my, like, getting into speed running.
Yeah. Dipping your toe. Yeah, for sure. So do you know how you even found Twitch or the idea of watching, you know, a person play retro games?
So how I found Twitch was through Hearthstone streamers. I played quite a bit of Hearthstone from like shortly after launch to like 2017 or 18. And so I had a few years of that and watching Twitch streamers do that. I mean, other than Endi Sui, right? I mean, that was probably it. I think I was watching people do like the Super Mario Brothers, any percent, trying to grind the world record. I would watch that. It was cool to see some progress being made. You know, every couple of months, they'd have one more optimization come out. And it was pretty cool.
But so it was Hearthstone, though, that introduced you to the idea of Twitch.
Yeah.
And watching streamers and stuff. Did you play Magic the Gathering or did you just find Hearthstone?
I played Magic in middle school and I did that for a few years. Me and probably like six or seven of my buddies in seventh and eighth grade were into Magic. And I played actually some other card games. There was like a Star Wars collectible card game. There was a Star Trek collectible card game. So I got to play those. Magic was the first one, though.
True. Sure. So what was it about Hearthstone then that drew you in?
Well, I love Warcraft. Is one of it. So it's all Warcraft characters and concepts and everything. So that was the first part. Second is, you know, lots of different play styles and strategies. And, you know, for a while, it's like, you know, it felt like it was just play to win. And so I was never, you know, I never really wanted to spend a whole lot of money on it. So I wasn't very competitive on it.
Okay.
But it was still fun to play. And I played with my brother all the time. And friends. Yeah.
So you got into World of Warcraft then?
I did. So World of Warcraft, I think it came out in 2004. I came around to it from 2005. Okay. Onward, and you know, I took a small break, but then, like, you know, I was playing that like nonstop every night. sure. You know, I was with a guild, and yeah, we did raids and all that. Kind of stopped a little bit. I don't know. I'd probably say like a couple of years into it, but then I picked it back up in 2014 all the way to like 2018. And I'm like, I don't know why I put this down. This is like the most fun I've ever had on video games.
Sure.
But the community, I ran into some characters and I play it as a healer. And if you're not healing the party, like the way that someone wants you to heal the party, like they can get pretty, pretty toxic and, you know, pretty crappy towards, towards you. So, you know, after enough like harassment of like, man, you're no good at this game, I'm like, all right, well, I ain't gonna play anymore. I don't need to deal with this.
Yeah. Oh man. I'm glad I never got into an MMORPG because I feel like it would just suck the time and life out of me.
It does.
Not necessarily in a bad way, but just, I can imagine ever being productive playing one.
I don't know. It just gets into your mind. Like,
yeah.
You kind of have a mini obsession over, okay, how do I min max this character? What equipment am I looking for? I got to plan my nights around my week around raid nights. Mm-hmm. Right. And I can't have any plans on a Tuesday and a Thursday. Maybe we'll do like a Sunday fun run or something. Mm-hmm. And it does. It really disrupts your life. So I know you've had other guests on the show say, don't play World of Warcraft. And I echo that. Don't play World of Warcraft.
If you're young and you have infinite time to do whatever, then maybe. But as an adult, man, it just seems so hard.
Yeah.
To just even manage it, like even between like if you're doing work and you're doing some other social stuff, it just takes so much time. But I understand the draw because it does seem like a lot of fun. The one that my friends got into was not EverQuest. It was something it was a free to play one. Gosh, I wish I could remember what it was, but I don't think it's around anymore.
I wasn't into any more MMOs other than World of Warcraft. So unless it was EverQuest, which is the other big one, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
Yeah. All right. So you found Twitch. You've done a couple speed runs. Where then do you find Link to the Past Randomizer?
Yeah. So I mentioned like I'm watching a couple of other retro speed runners, and I mentioned traveling for work. I was, you know, 6 months into a stint in Nashville, and I was getting bored, right? I mean, I can only go to the bar so many times, and it's like, all right, I'm just going to sit in my hotel room and, you know, watch whatever I see on Speedruns Live. And it's like, okay, someone's playing Earthbound. Someone's playing, you know, Donkey Kong Country. These are interesting things to see. And I start seeing at the Legend of Zelda, like, two or three of these, you know, fall tournament ALTTP randomizer. And I'm like, I see this for 3 days in a row. And I'm like, this sounds really interesting, but I'm going to watch this one instead, this other one instead. I finally get curious enough to watch one of these races in the fall 2017 tournament. And instantly I loved it. Like it was a whole production. You had people commentating on it, right? You start theory crafting with the with Twitch chat, and you like at that point it was early enough in the tournament, there was a race like all throughout the day, so somebody was always playing, and you got to just kind of see that all night. And when it ran out on one channel, you could go to the next channel. So Speed Gaming 1, Speed Gaming 2, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was my introduction to the Z3R.
So you see it, you start watching it. Do you get a desire to try it out?
At first, not really, because I hadn't played Link to the Past since, you know, the early 90s. It had been like 25 years at that point that if I wanted to pick it up, I'd have to like relearn to play the game. And they were going through locations that I forgot existed. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I saw it and I'm like, oh yeah, you can mirror up to this place in Misery Mire and go under that rock. I totally forgot about that. Right. Going to Checkerboard right. Cave.
Yeah.
But you're mentioning, hey, do I get a desire to play it? I actually first got the source code. It was like one of the old Desigrect builds was available. And I'm like, looking through it, I was curious how it even like happened to put this thing together. And between the commentators, Twitch chat, and reviewing the code myself, I'm like, okay, I think I understand the sequence that you're supposed to do things in this iteration of the game. And then I actually did download a seed myself, and I'm like, I'm terrible at this. You know, going, I can't do this. It's weird.
Yeah. I mean, the game is hard for sure. It's not an easy game.
Yeah. But so that was end of 17. In 2018, I did find the subreddit, the ALTTPR subreddit, and they have like all these async seeds. Yeah, there's like a bread and butter mode. There's a weird mode. There's a spoiler mode. And so for like 6 months, I was playing just those async. I mean, remember, I didn't like streaming. I didn't want to put myself out there. So this was a great way for me to get introduced to the game.
Sure.
And during that time, it was the spring 2018 tournament. And I'm like, you know, I almost signed up for it. But between me still being new and, you know, not ready, not just ready yet, I sat it out. But I watched like, I don't know, 6-7 matches every day. I'm like, this is so cool. And it wasn't until I think the following year is when I really started getting into it. So now we're into like 2019, where the first mentor tournament is announced, and I join the Go Mode podcast Discord. I start listening to the episodes, and I'm like, okay, now I have a chance to really understand how to play this game. I try to teach myself, and I'm like still not making any ground on the leaderboard. If someone's able to help me, like just give me hints, that would be awesome. So this is perfect for me.
So when you're first playing, or you're first watching and playing, and you talked about your shyness, or not necessarily shyness, just the anxiety that comes from the idea even of streaming. Are you not really finding people in the community, or are you just kind of doing this all on your own and just watching?
Yeah. So for that first year, it was really kind of on my own. Other than the people I might, you know, talk about, like the async seeds on the subreddit.
Sure. But that's still a pretty small group of people.
It's a small group, and it's not interactive. It's just like, yeah, I did this, I did that.
Yeah.
But I didn't really find people to, I don't know, like really play with, or really like form a bond with in that first year. And actually, I stepped away from it from like maybe the second half of 2018. I stepped away from it for like, 9 months or so, maybe because I just tried it on my own, wasn't really involved in the community, and then stepped back from it.
Yeah, it makes sense. If you're not invested, what keeps you going, right? Like it does take a little bit of investment, no matter what it is, whether it's rando or whatever. Like if you make friends or whatever, then it makes it easier, or it makes it harder to leave or stop playing, be a part of it. So you start listening to the Go Mode podcast and hear about the mentor tournament, right? Was this the first mentor tournament?
Yeah. So this was 2019, summer of 19, where it was like Timp and Axial putting it on. I think actually Timp did like 90% of it, from what I hear. And I started playing with, I think my group was, I know it was Xylo. I think Sneakbat was in that group. And then a guy named Bungied to the Tree. And so
I remember, Bungied. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started really forming a bond with like Xylo. You know, we would play like async back and forth, or not async back. We just play like casual seeds back and forth, and like really start to develop this, I don't know, mini rivalry is like, you know, hey, I'll take one and then he'll take the other. And, you know, it was cool. After that, first couple of races, you know, we started to talk more because we were grouped up, and that's why we got into this with each other.
Right. Did it help with the anxiety that comes with streaming for you?
I think so. Yeah. So I mean, I still like feel that way, but I still,
but you were able to, because you had to stream, right? Like you didn't really have a choice. When you're racing, you got to stream.
Exactly. If you want to play, you got to load up OBS and stream. But, you know, you don't have to talk. You don't have to put your camera on. It's just you and the game. So, and that's actually fine, right? I mean,
sure.
Don't have to have Twitch chat open. Just play your game and sign off when you're done.
So how did I feel like the mentor tournament? And I think you can speak to this because I think you help run the mentor tournament now, right?
Yeah.
So how has it changed from that first experience that you had to where it is now?
So let me kind of back up. So there's a little bit of evolution in how I even got involved in there.
Okay.
So I mentioned like Zylo and all that. He and I became buds. And one of the things he wanted to do was he wanted to have regular streams of this, the biweekly seed that comes out. Mm-hmm. And, it took some, a month of reminding Tim, hey, can we do this? Hey, can we do this? And eventually Tim's like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever the hell you want. So there were four of us. There was me and Zylo. There was Amarith and Lady Box Thief who were like interested in doing this. So we had Amarith restreaming. Zylo and I were on comms for like the first three or four of these. This was my first introduction to comms, helping me get out of my shell.
Mm-hmm.
And then LBT was tracking and it caught on. And I don't know, we kind of started managing this and we started getting more volunteers saying, okay, if we're going to put this on, I don't want to have to do it every 2 weeks. So let's just kind of manage how we're going to do this and tell people, hey, you know, if you want to restream, great. And we'll get some comms for you. And that happened for a few months. And we had our own private DM group for this. And they became, fairly close, like that that group of four. Eventually, the hosts were like, hey, you guys are doing this for us. We'll give you a channel in the Discord to help out on this. And we did this for the next 6 months. And when the Mentor Tournament 2020 came out, I don't know if the assumption was there that we would just kind of help put it on or what. I actually looked back through this a few months ago, seeing who actually asked if we wanted to do this. But I don't know. The four of us became like the admins of the Mentor Tournament that next year, because I knew Tim didn't want to do it all on his own. Axial had left the show at that point.
Sure.
So it's like, okay, yeah, we'll be happy to do this.
Mm-hmm. That's so funny. So again, speak a little bit about, if you can, the differences from when you started it to when you the new team kind of takes over.
So in the first one, there was like this grouping where if you win your games, I think against your first two opponents, you're in brackets. And if you end up losing, your opponent from your opponents, you're out. And we had some people who had, I think, like 3-4 games and they were done. Right. I think Oro did not have a great experience.
Yeah.
A couple of others didn't. But so that was one of the first things we wanted to fix, was everyone should get like the maximum experience from this tournament.
Right. So, because it's all about learning, right? How do you learn if you get knocked out right away?
Yeah. Right. And it's okay to lose in this tournament. We thought like, let's do a Swiss mode where, for the first 6 weeks you have, people of similar skills start, pairing up against each other. And then you will eventually end up in some group at the end where you can get the bracket experience, right? We wanted everyone to get the full experience all the way through. So everyone made brackets. That was a second change. And we had them like, okay, yeah, gold sword bracket is, here's the top runners. Here's the people who, won like 5-1 or some 4-2s. Mm-hmm. And that's the main bracket. So whoever wins that is the winner of the tournament. But then the others, they still got, something to play for. Hey, I want to still be the tempered sword champion or the master sword champion or something. So that was cool. And I think the other big thing, since we had LBT, who was a graphic designer, she put together like some really, really nice stream layouts. And, we got a better production value going. And we were able to, I think we doubled the size of the entrance from 2019 to 2020. So from 32 to 64. And, we've had to turn people away in subsequent years because, one, it's a popular tournament for newcomers. And, it's like, we have people who join, who want to join, but are like too good. Mm-hmm. So we have kind of a qualifier. It's almost like a reverse qualifier.
Right.
Right. So, you know, I mean, I guess if you're sandbagging, sure, you'll be in, but.
Yeah, but if you're sandbagging the mentor tournament, you got some issues that.
I mean, if you're cheating in the mentor tournament, yeah. I mean, and we had to deal with that too, which was really, that was really disheartening to have somebody cheat in the mentor tournament.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, for sure. Let me ask you this. You compete in the first one and then sort of take over in 2020, you said. How was your experience just as a racer, someone learning? Because you said, like, we had Aura on the show, and they talked about their experience, you know, in the mentor tournament, and it wasn't great because they got knocked out right away. Were you more competitive? Did you enjoy your time?
So I definitely enjoyed it. I had Hacksaw, I think, as my first mentor for a couple of times, and you know, he taught me a lot, like outside of the races, and then. When we were, you know, in the races, I did make it to brackets. I think Xylo and I made it out of our group as brackets, or into brackets. And I think I got knocked out by Zeitnix, who still does a lot for us in the community. But I, you know, it was still cool to, like, go through that and play against people who were of similar skill. Mm-hmm. Instead of going up against, if I had joined in the 512 tournament, I, you know, would have been lucky to win a game.
Mm-hmm. So are you finding your people then? Is that group of that would eventually go on and lead that mentor tournament? Was that like your group of people where you're getting connected? And
yeah, so I guess there's a lot of people in Go Mode who I end up, you know, having like friendships with. So there's those four. And then there's, you know, the hosts, right? I become close with them because, you know, we have to coordinate on, okay, here's what we plan on doing. You guys got to sign off on it, or, hey, be sure to mention this on the podcast or something. Mm-hmm. It's their place. I just hang out there. So it's, sure. I got to make sure everything is run by them. But those guys, and then there's people, you know, who were in the 2019 tournament. I also, in 2020 tournament, who I got close to, like Vertz is my league teammate. And then there's Xyla was also a league teammate that first year. Jossam Sauce, another one. And, you know, he's from my area, too. So, you know, just from that, we kind of got pretty close. There's probably a few others. I'm sorry that I can't go through the whole list of like relationships I have. Sure. But I mean, yeah, sure. Go Mode is like where a lot of my friendships came up.
Sure. You find your community there for sure. So where do you go with racing from there? Is the league the next thing you do? Are you attempting to qualify for tournaments or play in other tournaments? Where are you at?
Yeah, so this is 2019. I did a couple things after that. There was Speed Gaming Live. There was the qualifiers for there. There was League, which I joined up. I mentioned with Verts and Xylo that first year. That was going into 2020. That must have been 2020.
Yeah, I think it was early 2020 for season two, right?
Yeah. And we actually got in within the 14 seconds.
Oh, Bert's wow.
Bert's had everything like copied in a spreadsheet, and he's like, copy, paste, boom, submit. And we got in.
That's awesome.
So we did that. And then I have played, I think the next Challenge Cup was, there was Challenge Cup that year too. I did play in the Challenge Cup in 2019. And we put a lot of those on Go Mode too, and that was like a way to get like the podcast name out there, community's name out there. Like, hey, this is put on by the Go Mode podcast or whatever.
Sure.
And this is probably the tournament I did the best in. Is I got to, I think, second round of brackets in the Challenge Cup, losing to Dragon Strike, who was the eventual winner.
Wow. So,
yeah. So that's awesome. I mean, it's probably like a peak in it's probably where I've peaked in rando. my tournaments have not been great since.
So you guys joined the league, as you mentioned, you got in. How was your experience that first year? And did you become a mod that second season?
So second season, I was just a racer. And so this was like early 2020, the spring of 2020. We didn't do great, but hey, we were still all new players. We had some memorable moments between us and Ray. And didn't become a mod until, so Dante reached out to me that summer. And I think it was off the back of like managing, you know, the biweekly stuff and the mentor tournament, he's like, hey, would you like to be a mod? So for season three and onward, I've been a mod of League.
Okay. You had a tie that first season.
So, yeah. It was the first race we had on in League. And I had like five attempts at Hammer Trinex. And it was like, can't do it. Can't do it. All right. Let me go get some bottles. And got the bottles. Finished the seed, and of course it's a tie. So if I had done anything a little bit better, I would have won. That's okay. Yeah. Ties are cool.
Sure. Yeah. It's, they stand out for sure. And season two of the League infamously was very uneven because we didn't have the opener invitational yet. Right. So it was just everyone, and so it was hard to balance between newer runners, experienced runners. And so there was a lot of times in season two where things weren't as even as they would go on to be in subsequent seasons.
Yeah. And that was okay, because I got to play against people I normally probably wouldn't. And, sure, they're more experienced or, you know, better at playing the game than we were, but it was a lot of fun. I didn't see it as like, all right, we're going to get crushed. I saw it as, hey, I'm going to play Rando with a couple of buddies I formed with.
And was it fun? Did you enjoy that first season?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. League is, aside, I think, from the mentor tournament, League is my favorite event by far.
What is it? The fact that you get to play with friends, or?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it. Rando is better with friends. And I totally agree. Especially like, after you've been through it a few seasons and, you know, you're in the trenches with these guys, you build these memories. The pilot's spoiler is always like a good test of like trust in your teammates. So yep. it helps build a lot of that that friendship.
For sure. Now, there's something I don't think I've ever talked about on the show or pretty much anywhere was the open and invitational discussions, like going into how we decided, you know, we're going to split the league into two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after season two, we definitely figured we needed something. We needed to change something because we wanted to make it a little bit more balanced. And, you know, I had the idea of splitting it up into two leagues, but I had the hardest time coming up with what would eventually become the Invitational and the Open. Do you remember who came up with those names?
Sure do. I remember you put out a call to throw out some ideas, and I think we went through a few iterations, and I had come up with, well, what if we called one of them Open and the other Invitational? It's almost like golf, right? And that stuck, and you guys chose that. So my legacy will live on as long as League lives on.
For sure. And I don't think we've ever talked about that publicly because, you know, like initially it was like a major league and a minor league, but I hated using the term minor league because I didn't want it to feel like the minor leagues, right? Like,
It had to be something, if I remember, that had to communicate this is a higher level or like a more exclusive level, but not have the sense of like, discrediting or disparaging the people who aren't in that. So yeah, yes. Minor and major couldn't happen. You already had like a dark world, light world conference division. So I couldn't think of anything on theme, but just going back to the sports aspect of it is like, okay, you have like open tournaments and you have invitational tournaments. That seems like it could apply here.
Yeah. It's so simple in the way it works. And then the naming is perfect. But it took us a while to get there. And I was so glad when you came up with those ideas because it just fit and it works perfectly and it's great. And there's no one that has to feel like, oh, I'm in the open league. I suck, or I'm in the minor leagues, because there's excellent players in the open league. It has nothing to do with skill or talent or whatnot.
I'm glad you brought this up because like, it's something I would never go out and tout like, hey, you know how that got named? That was me. Because it's like, if I say it, it's like stupid trivia, but, sure. But, it's, something that, you know, I guess I contributed to the community early on.
For sure. It's super important. We have the invitational names and the open names because of you. I just remember that as we were talking about it too. So you go on and play, more every season, the grouchy old men, have played every season since season two. Can you tell me a little bit about where the name came from and then your teammates and experiences throughout the last few years?
So the name, a couple of us were just throwing out ideas, and I had a list of like things that were on theme with Zelda, and none of them were any good. Like I wanted a location and then a concept, like any sports team, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Seattle Kraken, right?
Right.
But I put together like, hey, we're the Kakariko Swarm, like, you know, with the chickens, which will swarm you.
Yeah.
And I put together some other
name, by the way. I think that name is awesome.
Kakariko Swarm. Yeah, yeah. That was cool.
Yeah.
And then I put together some silly ones like, dude, where's my moon pearl? Which I think someone else had like a name that season of like, where's the gosh darn Bamos or something. But then I don't know. I kind of played into the fact that I'm a little bit older than more people in the community, most people in the community. And then it's like, well, what if it was like the grouchy old man and hey, it's there's the uncle, there's the Hasrala and the old man in the mountain as our our team logo. And that's they're so like, good. Yeah, it sounds good to me.
That's really good. So you've had, let's see, your first season was you, Xylo, and Verts. And you mentioned Xylo was initially on the team for season three, but
Xylo was with us in season two. Me, Verts, and Xylo. And then Xylo ended up having to drop before season three started. So we picked up Slowpoke, whose team I think wasn't going to reform or went through some changes. And so Slowpoke has been part of our team in seasons 3, 4, and 5. Okay. And hopefully 6 if we come back. Mm-hmm. I'm planning on coming back, but we'll see what life has.
For sure. So what about the any other tournaments? Are you've been qualifying for the are you been missing out on the main tournament, right?
Well, I've been missing out because I don't qualify for it. No, I've been I guess trying to qualify for that tournament, and my positioning keeps getting lower and lower because I'm training all these people in the mentor tournament who keep kicking my butt on this. it's a product of, you know, my own undoing here.
Sure. So you're good at bringing people up, but it hasn't necessarily translated into any really big wins.
No. And part of that, of course, is like, I know my limits. I know my, you know, what I'm able to do, like as far as practicing and, you know, how much time I can commit to this game. And it's either like administrating something or it's playing, and usually administrating wins out because I feel like there's more people who will be affected by that than me practicing. So I don't practice a whole lot. You know, maybe I'll play a seed here and there. But as a result, right, that show is in where I'm qualifying. So I'm in the championship every year, and that's fine. That's kind of my level. You know, open league, I'm still there. We haven't made the playoffs yet. I'm still hoping for that one. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of other tournaments. You know, Ricky and I talked, I think in season two, about Pilot Spoiler Tournament because that mode is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And it took a while, but Ricky took the reins and invited me onto the team for it. And that tournament came out, had I think they've had two now. And a couple of others. I tried the Cross Keys tournament, but man, I can do Cross Keys fine, like on my own. Mm-hmm. Racing it is another layer of agony.
Sure. I understand that.
I don't like Cross Keys as a mode. I know I know people swear by it and they have it. It has its fans and that's great. It's not for me.
Sure. So where do you think your relationship is with racing? Do you feel like you're in a good spot? It doesn't feel like you're racing a ton. That's probably more, I don't know. Tell me, is that time? Is it your relationship with racing?
It may be a little bit of both. So a couple things. One is like the way my life is right now with family. You know, I've got, I mentioned I've got three boys of, you know, varying ages, and, you know, I have to make sure that, you know, my family comes first. So I would really only have time to race, I don't know, during like late evening or something. And with, you know, my career, over the past few years, I've kind of been thrown into more responsibility at work. So I can't really dedicate as much time to racing as I did when I first started. Because 2018, 2019, you know, I'd be racing, you know, pretty regularly, 2020 as well. But, life situation just changed. So I can't dedicate as much time. And then, of course, like you said, the relationship with racing, you know, me streaming, it's not something that I really enjoy. I only stream because they make us, to be truthful. So
it really feels like your relationship to the community in the game is more in an admin sort of role, a moderator role, someone that likes to give back and make sure that everyone else is kind of having a good time. Is that right?
And I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. You know, we get feedback from the mentor tournament every year, and all the mentees are super thankful for having this event, because it's not in, I think, most communities. I've asked around and it's not there. I want to join a couple of other randos just to see like what they're like, but it's hard to just go in and teach yourself how to play. So this is great. And then it shows in the results. People form these communities. There's communities and friendships that have formed because, you know, people go through the mentor tournament together. So I do get a lot of satisfaction out of like contributing to this community. And if something like this didn't exist, I don't know what the state of the community would be. I'm sure it would exist still. We'd still all be playing, but you wouldn't have the same fresh blood coming in every year.
It's awesome. It's so cool. I've always thought about mentoring, but I feel like I wouldn't be a very good mentor. So
I completely disagree with that. So let me put it out there. And, you know, I know we're already halfway through the Swiss mode and people have kind of formed their mentor-mentee relationships. But when this tournament comes out, you know, if you're even halfway okay at this game, you're a reasonable mentor. Like, so yeah, I think you'd fit in perfect here.
So if people are looking to volunteer for the mentor tournament, people are still able to do that, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we still have the sign-up form, but it's been pretty dormant since like the first week of the tournament because people who wanted to sign up have signed up.
Yeah.
I would love to get a lot more restreams out and showcase some of these racers. That's part of the point of the tournament, is not just like learning to race, but people get their start on commentary. People get their comm start or their restreaming start on this tournament, and it's a low stakes environment. So we just don't have enough restreamers to do it as much as we want. But yeah, if anyone's interested, just reach out, and of course you can be a mentor.
And you guys are planning on at least doing the mentor tournament every year, once a year.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan. As long as there's an interest. The numbers are a little bit down this year. We didn't hit the full 64 racers. Actually, last year we hit like 86 racers.
Oh wow!
And we had to turn away a bunch because we didn't have like the time or whatever to restructure the tournament. But numbers are a little down, which it's going to happen, right? I mean, we'll peak and go through peaks and valleys. The fact
that people are still coming, though, I think speaks a lot to word of mouth, and the fact that it's doing its job, right? It's bringing people into the community. It's helping them find people to play the game with, because that's what keeps us here, right?
Absolutely. You know, while we're still on the topic, I mentioned it's not in other communities. I had reached out to the Final Fantasy VI Worlds Collide randomizer, and I'm part of their Discord. I play that game occasionally, and I kept seeing people asking, like, "Hey, is there any sort of like training that someone can help me with?" Or, you know, I know that the Zelda community does a mentor tournament. Is there anything like that here? And there wasn't. So I reached out last year to the admins, and we set one up, and they had a whole event, and had a lot of new people join their
community. That's super cool. That's really cool. I love how much you give back to the communities that you're part of, Umaga. It's really neat. So do you feel you're good with where you're at then? I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. If I made changes to be more competitive, I would not have the kind of situation like with, you know, work and family and all that I have right now. And so I got a pretty good thing going on with all of that. I don't want to, you know, disrupt that any more than necessary. So I'm happy with where I am. I think awesome. I can still keep doing this.
That's cool. All right. tilt question coming up. I know you listen to the show. Obviously, you've introed the show for me, so I think you've listened to it.
No, I don't listen to your dang show.
The tilt question. So how do you handle tilt, whether it's in the middle of a race or at the end of the race? What's your approach to handling tilt?
So it's, if we're talking about like racing in general or this game, it's hard for me to actually get to a state where I'm going to be tilted, right? Mm. I think it happened early on, but at the end, this is just a game. I'm not playing for stakes, right? This is just something fun that I do, you know, once a week or a couple times a month to blow off steam. It's a hobby. Mm-hmm. And if I get mad at my hobbies, why am I doing that?
Right.
I even mentioned that the intro of your show, like, you know, if you're not having fun, like, what's the point? So that's kind of how I see this game. But tilt in general, I know you've talked about like mental health on this show. And I think that's awesome. I think it needs to be more out there. This is something that I've started to look into more like in the past year or two for my own self and for my own well-being. And part of, you know, what I've learned is like, first, you got to recognize that you are getting frustrated, like with what it is. And it could be like, look, I've got a 13-year-old who's acted like he's 16 for the past 4 years. So like it's frustrating to have to deal with that. And or I'm not very handy, for example, but I like to think I can do almost anything. And I can't. I have like my own skills and my own limitations. So when I do get frustrated with whatever it is, and could be work or something, I have to recognize like I am losing control of, you know, my ability to think properly or to act like I'm supposed to. That the first part is recognition. Second part is like I have to completely remove myself from that situation. And it could be like, you know, I'm arguing with someone on, you know, Discord or like getting frustrated with my kid or this thing isn't screwing in and staying stable or whatever. Like I put it down, I get out of here. I've done various tactics, go for a walk, go cut my grass or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to get my mind like focused on something else. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it takes a little bit more like recognition for me to get to that point. But that's kind of how I handle like tilt.
Awesome. I mean, just having an approach, being able to recognize that I'm getting tilted is such a win, right? Like a lot of times you don't even realize that you're tilted or that you're getting tilted and then how it's affecting you. So I'd be able to recognize that, I think is huge. So really good advice. Thank you so much for doing the show, man. I'm so glad I got to hear your backstory and gosh, it was so much fun. I've had a blast.
I had a blast too. I would love to keep talking, but I know that, we're coming up against time. Thank you so much for having me on this show.
Yeah. And again, thanks for helping me out in the times that they've helped me out with the show. I super appreciate it.
Anytime.
Huge shout outs to Lamago for coming on the show. Again, really appreciate him stepping in when he did. And I just loved hearing his story and just a good dude. Like, love to just hang out with Lumaga. Maybe take a trip down to 8 Mile. All right, that's going to do it for us here. Next week, we've got PH, and then Chex Human, and then Telethar. So just like Murderer's Row, 1, 2, 3 coming up. So stay tuned for those. I hope I don't have to do another bonus episode. I don't think that will happen. I don't think anything's going to blow up between now and next week. But if it does, boots on the ground, I'll be there to hopefully be able to talk to people that are involved. I think that was one of the most fun things, is just being able to react as it was happening. Thanks everyone for listening to the bonus episode. As of right now, it's the second most listened to episode that I've put out, and it's only been a few days. So, bad things happening sells podcasts, apparently. So if you listened to that episode and that was your first episode and you stuck with us, thank you so much. If you could subscribe wherever you get podcasts, that helped me out. If you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and are able to leave me a review, that also helps me out. 216pod.com has the links to the Discord. Would love to know what you think about the show, what you think about what's going on in the community. Post it all there. I know there's tons of conversations going on in all of the Discords, especially the Tark Discord. More than anything, thanks for listening. I super appreciate it. Come back next week for PH. See you then.